Good afternoon. Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the ramifications of change and how today's choices will affect tomorrow's community. This program is an extension and production of Action for Healthy Communities and provided in collaboration with KCBX. It's made possible through underwriting by Joan Geller Sargent. I'm your host, Chris Kington Barker. The winter holidays are in full swing with ugly sweater contests, gift exchanges, family get-togethers, company and friend gatherings for celebrations. But for those of us who've experienced the death of a loved one, the holidays can be an especially challenging time. It's not uncommon for a sense of loss to spike around the holidays when memories of past times and togetherness during the season serve to remind us of those who are no longer physically present. Facing the festivities when asking ourselves, how am I going to get through this, is the topic of today's show. I'll be visiting with my guest, Tony Huffaker, who's a licensed marriage and family therapist and counseling services director for Hospice of San Luis Obispo County. Also with me is Wynette Winkler, a hospice volunteer with Hospice San Luis County and an end-of-life doula and the group facilitator for the Pet Loss Support Group for Hospice SLO. We're going to be talking today about grief and the holidays and ways of planning and making choices that can be helpful both to those that are in grief and also for others around them. You're invited to participate in our conversation, and you can do that by calling us at 805-781-3875. Again, we'd love to hear from you, and that's 805-781-3875. And thank you both for coming in today.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Chris.
You know, this is a topic that I can't count anymore how many times, especially in the last month, since just before the Thanksgiving get-together started, I haven't had people come up and talk about just how difficult this time of year is for them. Do you hear that quite a bit?
Quite a bit. You know, I think for my part, I don't know about Wynette's, for my part, certainly by the time people come to talk to me, they're already sort of going through a grief process and kind of aware of that and bringing that up. But just generally speaking, yeah, I think people are really flummoxed about what to do when they're not feeling quite so cheery and chipper and ready to be happy. And yet while people are expecting that they're going to go along in that process.
Yeah. There's some people that say that the first year really is a difficult year because it's kind of a first time of every occasion being without that loved one. Mm-hmm. Is that so?
And I experienced that last year. I had the loss of a very, very dear friend, elderly friend, and when the holidays came around, it really hit me again as to what I had lost, what I was missing, what I wasn't ever going to be able to do again because that person wasn't in my life. I can say now this year I'm at my second holiday without this person, and it's much more fond memories. Mm-hmm. Last year it was much more difficult.
So painful memories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was the really feeling the loss. This year now I think back to the good times that we had.
Is that common in a grief process, Tony?
It works all kinds of different ways. Yeah. I mean, in my experience, that's a common thing you often hear from people. Wow, the first Easter, the first Thanksgiving, the first Christmas. One of the things that's hard is people, I think, have kind of gotten that impression that the first year is the tough year, and then the second year rolls around, and it's just as hard for some people or harder for some people than the first year.
Yeah.
So it kind of goes both ways, you know, and then for some of us, it's just really extremely random. I can remember after my father died, first couple 3 years around the anniversary of his death, you know, it was like any other day of the year to me. Fourth year, I was kind of out of sorts. I didn't know why. Mm-hmm. Thought about it afterwards. Fifth year, going into it, I knew and was just pretty much a mess. And then the sixth year, not at all. You know, so for very much, I think for us, it's very idiosyncratic. And I think that's one of the hard things about grief is because it's so difficult, we want to come up with a framework where we're going to say, oh, this is this, that is that, this is what's going to happen. And it's true. All those things happen depending on who you are and what your personal experience is. It's going to be different.
And I think Tony makes a great point, too. Any year is a different year. What you have going on in your life, personally, professionally. Mm-hmm. For me this year, you know, I certainly feel I've got some other ducks in a row, so to speak. And so I'm able to handle it without that person being there. Next year, who knows? You know, life changes
right.
year to year, moment to moment. And that loss of that person, or in the case of the support group I lead, that pet that really sees you through things can be different all the time, every year.
Yeah, and I want to talk about animals, too, in this conversation today. Something that you said, Tony, triggered me when you were talking about, you know, the first couple or 3 years being less difficult. I had an experience after my mom's death where I wasn't realizing that I actually was in the midst of feeling grief, but I felt out of sorts and wasn't tracking, and this was 2 years later, mm-hmm. but I wasn't tracking well. My temperament was much more flare-up-y and just not how I would normally operate. And I didn't put it together with the mm-hmm. anniversary of her death. Is that something that...
Sure. It's strange, isn't it? Because you would think that would be like, oh, this is this.
This is 2 years later,
yeah,
right?
But so very often, pardon me, yeah, it is common for us not to connect these things or for our loved ones to be the people who kind of put the connections to it for mm-hmm. us. Yeah,
I had, you know, I was trying, really searching, and then I went, wait a minute, this is February, and this is this date, and what have I got going? Oh, my gosh, you know, mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. So when can we begin to see that things are happening for us, that they're having a toll on us or an experience? How can people identify that?
I think one of the first things that you want to do, if you can, is to remember dates. You know, and just to remember, oh, you know, sometimes, you know, it seems a little odd, I don't know. We have dates on the calendar in my house. And,
right.
you know, when we're coming up on an anniversary of someone who's important to us, who we lost, their name is on the calendar. And you flip to December and you go, ah, Loreen, okay.
Yeah.
You know, this is coming up. I think one of the things that really comes with it is it's one of those things for anybody that you'd suggest is really that kind of trying to have some self-awareness in terms of slowing down and taking it easier, you know, whether you practice meditation, whether you hike, whether you, you know, do things to slow. And then, of course, what's the antithesis of that? The holiday season.
Right.
You know, so if that is a loss of yours is around or is triggered by the holidays, all the stuff that goes on this time of year makes it a lot harder to really remind yourself, oh, yeah, I need to take a step back here. What's going on?
Yeah. Yeah. So if someone is noticing that maybe they're not sleeping well, maybe they're just more irritable, or those are things that may be stress of the holidays, but they may also be associated with something more than that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what can they do?
Well, what kind of things can people do? You know, it's always, I think, best to have community, you know, and so... if you have family that's supportive, if you have friends that are supportive, people that you can talk to about your experience and what's happening. A lot of times we have to create community rather than working with the community that we're mm-hmm. given biologically, you know, whether that's through a support group, through a spiritual practice, whether it's through an organized practice like their church or some other kind of spiritual practice,
right.
Whether it is through a therapist or a counselor, you know. But I think one of the most important things, first of all, is to have other people that you can bounce these things off of and who can give you honest feedback and go, huh, you know, you seem a little cranky this month. You know,
mm-hmm.
is that what's that about?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the first things to do. Of course, with anything else, like we'd always say, and again, it's hard at the holidays, right? But exercise, sleep, hydration,
right.
you know, all those kinds of things that you do to maintain your mood that are your practices are really important to help reduce that reactivity that we have as we get irritable.
You know, you mentioned the calendar that you keep about recognizing dates, mm-hmm. Not only of birth dates, but dates of death. And is that something that would be helpful? I mean, is it helpful to have a way of having some kind of a memorable ceremony or a ritual, or just maybe it's just even taking a pause and lighting a candle for someone about their anniversary of their death?
Sure. I know it is for me.
Yeah.
You know, and it's something that I do. I don't know that everybody would.
Sure.
Some people would probably go, oh my goodness, you've got
weird.
A calendar. Yeah, you've got dead people's names on your calendar. You know, what's that about? But I think it's so easy to blow past those anniversaries.
Yeah.
And so I do think it's important. And I think, again, one of the things that's so important is that, just like you say, we realize, however we want to honor someone passing is okay. You know, that's important for us. Especially so often people are living in separate areas, you know. My wife and I recently lost someone, and the family's not going to most likely be doing very much of a ceremony, and you know, may just sort of keep things very, you know, the nuclear family may keep things themselves, which is fine. That's what they need to do. That's completely appropriate. But we're realizing, wow, we really need something for us, and that's okay. You know, it doesn't have
right.
to involve anybody else. But mm-hmm. we, you know, we may need, you know, to light a candle or to, you know, support a cause that was important to our friend, or to, you know, to do whatever it is that needs to be done to help us process that. So absolutely, I think it's, again, one of those things, going with kind of being mindful and aware, is it's so easy to blow by anniversaries of really important things, and especially around this time of year, because we're just so busy.
Yeah. Yeah. And when I – go ahead. You were going to say something.
I think I would echo what Tony says. I see this a lot in our support groups, the self-care, definitely. And it's when you've lost sight of, am I taking care of myself? When you lose sight of the good sleep, the good food, the good hydration, stepping back and going, whoa, I got to think about this for a minute. And then beyond that, what you personally like to do to honor someone, as someone who is in your life, or something, or a pet, or anything in your life that you're now missing. I mean, that's one thing I love about Dia de los Muertos, just a really nice day to remember many losses mm-hmm. in your life. But mm-hmm. it's the hardest part, I think, is finding that sweet spot. Every person is different. Every situation is different. Every year is different. So it's stepping back and taking the time to see what works for you mm-hmm. personally.
Yeah, you know, and you mentioned every year is different. It may be that the first couple of years that there is something more ceremoniously that someone feels a calling to do in recognition or honoring of that person, and that starts to fade a little bit. And it's not that they love them any less or miss them any less, mm-hmm. But that they just, their needs are different in relationship to that loss.
Yeah. As time goes on, we accommodate differently to a loss. Now, not just with grief in the holidays.
Talk a little bit about that. What do you
yeah.
mean?
Well, basically, you know, what happens is basically a loss, I mean, I'm trying to think of an analogy. You know, it's kind of like, say I've injured my hand. You know, and so I'm right-handed, and I've injured my right hand, and a lot of things that I did with my right hand, I really can't do it. You know, maybe the fine detail work I can't do anymore. I can still drive. I can still put my key in the door, but I can't write, or I can't.
And it feels awkward.
And it feels awkward, and it's
right.
just not
You're
working.
Off.
And maybe, you know, I'm going to do physical therapy or do whatever I can to try to improve that, but the reality is, boy, this hand is just not going to do that for me anymore. So I have to start accommodating. Well, what do I do with my left hand? You know, what can I learn to do? Maybe I learn to sign my name with my left hand. Maybe I, and it's not going to be the same. My signature is not going to be
right.
the same with my left hand, but I'm accommodating that injury. I'm not curing that injury. I'm not replacing that injury. I'm not making that injury go away.
Mm-hmm.
But I learn to do things. I accommodate that. My life goes on differently,
yeah.
but it goes on. Grief, a lot of times, this is what we do. We accommodate it. You know, there's a hurt there. And that hurt doesn't go away. That person doesn't become, thank goodness, as if they never were to us.
Right.
But then we can't, generally speaking, live our life in that same degree of the freshness of the hurt day in and day out, year in and year out. We have to adjust our lives somehow so that we go on living and functioning. We won't be exact. I'll be left-handed instead of right-handed, but I'll still be able to sign a check.
Yeah.
You know, so I won't lose my house. I'll make my mortgage payment.
Right.
You know, that kind of that.
I think
thing.
Tony makes a good analogy, is that hand is healing. And so there's some healing that can happen, too, in the grief process, giving your system that time to heal, taking extra care of that hand, helping that hand heal.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it's maybe back and stronger, then deciding what you're going to do. Can you use that hand again? So I guess just using that analogy, that sometimes you need that healing time. And it's longer for some injuries, shorter for others.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you
if I get a paper cut, that's gonna it's not a real big deal. It's gonna heal relatively quickly. You know,
or you
if
fracture a hip like my mom just did,
right,
and that takes a lot, and
time.
You never quite get back to where you were. But boy, oh boy, when you're 92 and you're determined, you are gonna get back up and keep walking.
Yeah. When we talk about general grief, I'm gonna just go to a break real quick, but I want to come back and talk a little bit about just the overarching umbrella of grieving and some of the theories about grieving, and then talk more about the holidays and grief. You're listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX HD1 San Luis Obispo, KNBX HD1 San Ardo, and KSBX in Santa Barbara. Our topic for today is grief and the holidays, and my guests are Tony Huffaker, licensed marriage and family therapist and counseling services director for Hospice San Luis Obispo County, Wynette Winkler, hospice volunteer, end-of-life doula, and pet loss support group facilitator for our Hospice of San Luis County. You too can participate in our conversation today. If you have questions or comments about your experience with our topic, you can call us at 805-781-3875. Again, that's 805-781-3875. And Tony, when we're talking, or in you too, when we're talking about grief, generally, there was an old theory of grief that it was really linear.
Mm-hmm.
And how does that fare now?
Generally, you know, everybody, if you ask them, will tell you about DABDA, denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance, the Kubler-Ross model. I always like to talk about that. It was so pivotal at the time in the 60s. There's a movie from the 70s called All That Jazz.
Yeah.
And they actually, there's a little scene in there where somebody is doing a comedy riff that they're editing.
It's a great scene.
This chick, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, without the benefit of dying herself, right? I mean, it was just amazing that they were, I mean, you wouldn't get that now. It was a fantastic theory. Even though Kubler-Ross said, hey, this is basically meant for people who are dying themselves. And people kind of grabbed hold of these stages and made them like reified them. You know, so it was kind of like, well, first I have to have, you know, denial. And if I don't have denial, then I can't get to my anger. And we realize that's not really how it works. So there's a lot of different ways of looking at grief now. Primarily, most people think in terms of what they call a task model. So for instance, J. William Warden has a four-task model of grief. You're basically, his theory is you're going to do four things. You know, you're going to feel the shock of the grief. You're going to feel the emotions of the grief. You have to create a life for yourself without your person. You have to find a way to stay emotionally connected to them, and yet move forward.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not going to do those like A, B, C, D. You're going to go back and forth. Sometimes some things are going to be more important than other things. Sometimes, hey, it's April and my person always paid the taxes. I better figure this out. You know, that task three, as he would call it, is going to be more important maybe than the task two, having your feelings. So there's that sort of thing. There's a real, I think, more understanding of grief is coming and going. There's a couple of psychologists somewhere in Northern Europe, I want to say the Netherlands, Strobe and Schutt, and they talk about the dual process model of grief. Sometimes you grieve, sometimes you kind of go out in the world and do stuff because you have to, you know, and so you move back and forth between those things. So a lot more fluidity and a lot more really understanding that everybody's grief is going to look different. We have some universal parts that we all do, but the way that manifests is not going to look the same for any two people.
What is it about individuals that sometimes a death can happen and they feel extremely sad about it, but it doesn't really have a major impact in their life, and then years later something comes back up that becomes really important, and it's astoundingly powerfully impactful.
A number of things that can be. First of all, you know, we can look at what, you know, we call compound grief, which mm-hmm. is just that after a certain point, you know, just like compound interest on your credit card, after you spend enough money, these little things add up and they suddenly catch up with you. Sometimes you have a series of losses and you're okay, and then it just exceeds your capacity to do it. Sometimes it can be symbolic in your life, you know, especially with younger people when we talk about children and adolescents. You know, a lot of times, one of the things that's very important for us to understand is that developmentally, children are, and that's one of the things, children development go through different stages, and we've kind of heard that idea. So, you know, children who are like, say, younger than 7 don't understand death is permanent, you know, real or as a whole, you know, they don't quite get that. People who are in their teenage years kind of think death isn't going to come for me. You know, we do these things. Mm-hmm. So developmentally for children, as they go through each different stage, as they go through these major life events, they graduate high school, they graduate college, they get married, they have their first child, they're going to process their grief again and again. And so at one point, you know, you might be graduating from high school and have lost a parent who was important to you. But you're kind of okay with that. You know, that's for whatever. You're with your friends. You're doing things maybe.
Yeah.
You have your first child, and all of a sudden you realize you don't have a parent there
to be with you during that.
And that's a whole different developmental task. Yeah. And so that can be another reason why sometimes the loss will catch you. Sometimes we're just so dang busy. You know, someone dies. We've been caretaking them. They're sick. We settle their estate. We have to go back to work. We have to pay our own bills. Something happens, and we get a chance to relax. And all of a sudden, now we have an opportunity to really feel what we didn't get a chance to feel years before.
Yeah, yeah. And Wynette, I'm really curious too. You lead a pet loss support group.
Yes, I do.
And how long has hospice been doing a pet loss support group?
Yeah, longer than I've been doing it, which is, I think we decided 4 or 5 years, several years prior to that. So a really important component of what we provide for the community, for our different support groups that we have listed on our website. I think a really helpful one, particularly with pet loss. I've had it happen in my own life where someone think, oh, you know, it's a pet, get over it. If that pet was really important in your life, as for many of us who are very, very animal-centric, it's huge. And I think back to my very dear friend that passed away. I had lost my father, and he was 94, and it had been a protracted illness. I felt like I had had time to prepare for that loss, and really it was a relief because he was starting to suffer. It was a few months later, I had a parrot that we'd had for 15 years who very suddenly died, and my friend's comment to me was, well, you were more upset about that parrot than your dad, which really hurt, but yeah. I also realized I was very prepared for my father's passing. In retrospect, I really realized that I wasn't prepared. That parrot got suddenly ill. I felt responsible because I was a caregiver, mm-hmm. and I wasn't able to save him. So that the different loss at the different time, a different being in my life, still very important.
I noticed that when we look at the statistics of people in this country that have animals that mm-hmm. they take in as part of their families, these are not animals that live outdoor and are working animals, but these are animals that live in the house and are considered a part of the general family. That number is really astounding, I think, for both dogs and cats. And so that becomes an extended member of the family.
And a huge member of the family in terms of, for instance, I'm thinking dogs because I have several of my own, that non-judgmental, they're with you through thick and thin. As long as you keep providing kibble, in the case of my dachshunds, they will love me forever. But they're always there. I come home, they're happy to see me because I can open the kibble jar. But they're happy to lay there with me because I lay there and pet them. And, you know, they look at me with their adoring eyes, wondering when the next kibble's coming down.
Yeah.
They see me through thick and through thin. I see them more than I see my husband because he works out of town. And they're just very near and dear to my heart. I love the time so that with the pet loss support group, we're all able to join each other and reflect on the pets that we've had in our lives, the ones we have currently, the ones we've lost. I've had people ask me, well, how can you lead this support group? It must be so depressing to hear about these losses continually. And I said, no, it reminds me why I should appreciate the pets I have, why I should appreciate the things they have in my life, and I appreciate the people that come to the group and how they help each other. It is really, really special.
Something that was triggered for me is when my dad died, he and my mother had a dog that was their child. You know, it was this beagle. And after my dad died, my mom still had the beagle. And the focus became all on this beagle. And this beagle was sickly from the time he was 2 years old. So this beagle now was venturing into 7 years old by the time my dad died. And my mother and father had been very effective in keeping this dog alive and the medications and the physician's visits. And my mother kept that dog alive for the next 5 years. But as soon as the dog died, that was it for her. Do you find that that's some attachment to an animal when you've got people that have co-parented, if you will, that animal, that that becomes something very special?
I find that particularly in our pet loss support group, because we have people where that pet saw them through another loss.
Yeah.
And that loss can be a divorce, the loss of a job, any loss in their life. And that pet was the connector that helped get them through. And then when that pet passes away, as Tony talked about, compound grief, the person, it really hits them because that component of their life is gone, and that can be really, really hard. And that's where the power of a support group, where other people understand how much that pet meant to you, what that pet got you through in terms of companionship, always being there for you, is just huge.
Yeah. And support groups, I'm assuming for humans, work the same way.
Sure.
In terms of what's the difference between somebody coming in for individual grief counseling and coming into a support group? Talk a little bit about what Hospice Slow offers in terms of services and how that's differentiated.
Sure. So in addition to offering community response, where we go out in the community and community education, you know, we do individual and support group counseling. The thing that, before I do what's different, the thing that's the same about both of those is our framework is that grief in and of itself is not an illness or a sickness. You know, you may have some other health or mental health issues, you know, or in addition to your grief, but your grief itself is not.
It's like a natural response.
Yeah, it's part of life.
Yeah.
You know, it's not an illness. It's not a, you know, it's a part of life. And so what both of this individual and the support group counseling are about is just that support to help you understand the process. We find a lot of times just to, as we say, normalize and validate your grief and say, hey, you have a perfect right to be upset that your dog died. You know, because people will say to you, get another dog.
Yeah.
You know, you have a perfect right, you know, to be upset. When people say to you, hey, you're young, you can get married again. You know, you don't need, so you need
right.
support in your grief. A support group, the difference is a support group, at least I find, and I don't know if you feel the same way, but you get the support of other people who've been through the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you get, and your counselor individually may or may not have been through the same thing, but that's not the point of the individual counseling. It's not something that you discuss often. But in the support group, you see other people who have lost a pet, or in the case of suicide bereavement group, lost someone to suicide, or in the case of spouse loss group, lost a spouse or a partner. And you can see how other people have dealt with the same situation and what it's meant to them. Individual counseling is usually a lot of times if you feel you really want to speak to somebody privately, you have maybe it just feels so emotional to you, you feel like other people's discussion of their loss is kind of dysregulating you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you need a chance to talk to somebody individual and figure things out. Maybe you want to discuss things privately for some reason. You know,
yeah.
It's not at all unusual when people have caretaken somebody, been their caregiver, or somebody's been married to somebody for a long time, or even any other kind of relationship, that you don't necessarily have all positive feelings about the
yeah.
person who's died. And you may or may not feel comfortable, at least initially, going into a group and saying, boy, I love that dog, but, you know, cleaning up after him once he lost bladder and bowel control really was a problem. Or, you know, I love my late spouse, but, you know, boy, they had their moment. And not everybody's ready to
right.
speak ill of the dead.
Right.
You know, I'm doing air quotes and I realize nobody
yeah.
can see that. It's radio. And so one of the things that individual lets you do is have those kinds of discussions about things that you may feel are a little too sensitive yet to share with other people.
Yeah.
And we certainly have clients that access both modalities, both support groups and individual counseling, all provided by free by Hospice Slow. It can be at the same time, one before the other, one after the other. Really, again, depends on the individual and what their needs are.
Fantastic. You're listening to Central Coast Voices, and I'm your host, Chris Kington-Barker, on KCBX, your public radio, from Salinas to Ventura, and on the web at kcbx.org. My guests are Tony Huffaker, licensed marriage and family therapist and counseling services director, and Wynette Winkler, hospice volunteer, end-of-life doula, and pet loss group facilitator, and both are here from Hospice of San Luis County. Our topic for today's show is grief and grief during the holidays. And today's show is live, and we welcome you to participate in our discussions with some comments about experiences you've had or things that have worked for you or not, and or any questions for the guests today. You can do that by calling us at 805-781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. You had mentioned the different kinds of support groups that you have at your organization, and I'm assuming that different types of deaths can also cause different kinds of trauma or different kinds of responses from people who are grieving. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. There's an acronym that we use pretty often, which is NASH. Okay. Natural, accidental, suicidal, homicidal. So the idea is all things being equal, usually a natural death is easier to accommodate than an accidental death, than a death by suicide, than a death by homicide. So the nature of the death in and of itself will affect how people process the loss. That's generally. Now, the other side is a whole bunch of things. It's your relationship to the person. It's what kind of support that you have, both socially and, you know, financially. It's your own mental health, your own physical health. It kind of varies. You know, you can say, okay, this, you know, for an example, most people will say, you know, a death of a child is a very difficult thing.
Yes.
Because it just doesn't seem to fit the natural order of things, mm-hmm. you know, and so that the very nature of that death is more difficult. Generally speaking, for most people, a sudden death is more difficult to immediately process than a death that they've had some time to prepare for, although that's not always true. All these things are very individual.
So, and then when you were talking about sequentially and the NASH, the
natural, accidental, a suicide, a homicide.
So they get more difficult to process
generally speaking,
as you go down that scale.
Right. And then depending on your relationship with a person. So say, for instance, you might have a fourth cousin that you met once at a family reunion, and they died an accidental death, that death might still be much easier for you to process than a natural death of your grandfather who watched you every day when your mother was at work and your dad was at work. So it's also the individual relationship as well as the type of death that affects how we react to it.
Yeah. Does also with, you know, and I've encountered this in my own life too, with a death by suicide, the stigma that's attached to that too, of having to walk through that with family, of how do you explain that? Do you explain it? Do you not? Do you avoid it?
Right.
What does that mean about you? What does it say about family?
Right. And if I could just even say one thing to the community at large, when you find out that someone you love has lost someone to suicide, and this is just my experience having participated in the group for about 8 years at Hospice Slow, one thing that's really super important not to do is to ask, well, how did the person
what
die?
Happened?
What happened? You know, so often we're shocked, and so we inadvertently and not ill-meaning start to ask, well, what happened? Well, you can imagine how traumatizing that is for the person who's lost someone. Now they're basically in a spot where they have to tell you, hey, mind your own P's and Q's.
Or lie.
Or go through. So it's always one of those things that's really important. We're very careless. And I say we, because I know, boy, before I started working at hospice, I didn't think of these things.
Yeah.
We're very careless about things that we think are kind and concerned and caring. Someone tells us that there's been a death. And I'm not saying you should never ask what happens, but you know, you might want to really think about how you phrase that question, or maybe ask it in terms of like getting permission. Do you want to tell me what happened, or is that something that's private for you now? You know.
Right. Yeah, a much better way to state it. We've got a call here from, it looks like, Sandra in Rio Grande. Sandra.
Yes.
Hi, welcome. Did you have a comment or question? Sandra? I think we lost Sandra here. Sounded like she was in her car. Call back if you can, Sandra.
And I can interject here just as a comment in terms of the pet loss world. We do have the option where as owners, caretakers of our animals, that we do have to make the decision sometimes when we're going to put an animal to sleep.
Yeah.
When to make that call. And again, a very difficult thing for people to do. What I find consistently in our pet loss group, the difficulty in, did I do that too soon? Did I do that too late? When is the perfect time? And what I find there that was helpful for me that I use with a lot of people is the phrase, better a day early than a day late in terms of the suffering of the animal. But again, as Tony mentioned, for other people asking questions, that can be really difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to try Sandra here. Sandra, are you there?
I am.
Hello.
Thank you.
Welcome back. Did you have a comment or a question?
I do. You know, I actually have extensive experience with grief. I've been a critical care nurse for 17 years, but I've also done hospice for some time. And, you know, grieving is something, it's a word to us, but it's a word that really has different meanings to different people. And, you know, some people may be experiencing grief, and you ask them, you know, are you feeling sad? Are you feeling grief or anything? And they will say, oh, no, I'm fine. But then they'll turn around and do something, some kind of erratic behavior that is not normal for that person. And, you know, sometimes as friends or family, we will start saying, oh, God, you know, she's just being weird. She's just being mean, da, 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 da. But, you know, we need to be understanding that this person may be grieving and not able to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the other thing that's important to remember.
I think we lost Sandra again, but that's, you know, she is in her car. But Tony, that goes back to what we were talking about before. And thank you for bringing that up again, Sandra, because it's a really good point that, you know, we sometimes may be able to see in others what they don't see in themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we're noticing different behavior from individuals, can you talk a little bit about the kinds of things that we might see?
You know, you'd see it's such a range of things. Again, it's one of those things with grief is it's so hard to know what grief is in a sense because grief is so many things to so many people. But I think a big part of it is noticing change, kind of as the caller was saying.
Right.
You know, when you see somebody behaving in a way that they don't typically behave in, that probably tells you something is going on. And, and then, of course, the way is, how do you ask about that? And hopefully you ask about it nicely. Not, you know, you've been just so difficult since you lost your...
What's the matter with you?
Yeah, yeah. But hey, I've noticed this and this and this. Is something going on different for you?
Can I help?
Lately?
Can I be here for you? Can we talk about it? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you find that sometimes in the case of parents or spouses that, or maybe it's an adult child with a surviving spouse, that they'll notice things the person is not saying, I'm grieving, but they're encouraged to come in for counseling or for some support?
Sure. And again, I think one of the things we have to watch too is I think a lot of times we encourage people to come in for counseling because of our discomfort. You know,
talk about that for a moment.
Okay. Well, a lot of times people are sad and, you know, it's hard for
really
us.
Really sad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like overwhelmingly sad. Yeah. Like I'm not going to get out of bed and take a shower for 2 or 3 days and just, you know, immediately after a loss. And so people hate to see their loved ones in that kind of pain. And it's an unusual behavior. And by golly, it's America. And we expect people to kind of move through those things.
Yeah.
And so our discomfort sometimes leads us to want people to get counseling or to do something about their grief when what they need is support and caring and maybe me to bring you a glass of water or a cup of tea or, you know, a little snack while you're in bed because you're not going to get up and feed yourself for a few days and kind of sit with that person's pain before we try to solve it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes absolute sense. I'm going to go to Kat here. Kat, are you there?
I just took the drink of the wrong stuff at the wrong time, sorry. Yeah, I called about the grief program is very interesting because I'm just kind of going through a grieving process myself, and I got an Awake, which is produced by Jehovah's Witnesses, and they do go door-to-door, and they don't ask you for money, but this one is the Awake. It's number 3-2018. Help for those who grieve, and it takes you step by step through the grieving that you go through. And sometimes you get stuck, you know, even if you know what the Bible teaches about death and that that person's not suffering, you still grieve. It's natural.
And that was helpful for you, Kat.
Yes, very helpful. And I'd like other people to, when Jehovah's Witnesses come to the door, ask for a copy of that Awake. It's number 3-2018. Help for those who grieve, and it's really helpful.
Well, thank you, Kat. I appreciate
you.
Appreciate you calling. Bye-bye.
You take care, okay?
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And Koshi, Kathy.
Kathy.
Kathy, I am having a hard time reading. Hi.
Hi. So we just lost our beloved pet and companion 3 weeks ago.
Aww.
To a car, and so it's been quite a shock, and we're hurting, of course. And my question is, I'm finding my husband and myself grieving very differently. I'm very upset. He's devastated, and so we're just grieving very, very differently, and I'm wondering if you can just discuss how couples deal with each other's grief when they're grieving so
when it's so different. Good question.
And thanks, Kathy. This is Wynette. That's a great question. I'll put in another plug for our support group. It's a really great way for a couple to come and to experience, you know, if they're experiencing their grief differently, and I have many couples that have come in that situation, and to be able to explore those differences together and with the group, with other people there. And then to also, at that point, a lot of times after a session or two in the support group, the couple will go to couples as a couple to counseling, and then possibly individual counseling after that. So it's very helpful, I think, for people to come and be able to explore where they're both at, to see other couples that are in the same situation. And I see that very, very regularly. It's a very different loss between a couple, between other members of the family. We all experience grief differently, and depending on who is the primary caregiver, if an animal, a pet was very ill, I've had people point out that for the person who was providing most of the care, very, very difficult to lose that. I think Tony might have a comment as well.
Yeah, I'd just like to add on, if I could, too, generically, even moving away from pets, you know, one of the things that we've really come to realize in the last decade or so is that there are different styles of grieving. And so, you know, they used to call it masculine and feminine grief before they realized that's really not what it's about. But we talk a lot about instrumental and intuitive grieving. And intuitive grieving is grief like we think grief is. People who are intuitive grievers usually express their loss through feelings, through sadness. You look at that person, you say, oh yeah, that person is bereaved. You know they're bereaved. Instrumental grievers are people who do their grieving by doing things. They process their grief by action. These are the people, say, who go out and put flowers at the highway markers. You know, every day they get out, drive 50 miles round trip to put flowers out at the highway marker where the accident happened. Or they do fundraising marches for the disease that took their person.
Create a foundation.
Those types of things. So instrumental and intuitive, that can often be a big issue, as Wynette was alluding to, for couples, because you don't realize that each other are both hurting because one of you doesn't necessarily look. You look at an instrumental griever, they don't look like they're hurting. They are. But they don't express it the same way.
Yeah.
For instance, my husband, the engineer. It's very different than me, the accountant.
Yeah. Does that answer your question, Kathy?
Yeah, that's intuitive and instrumental.
Yeah.
That's very helpful to think of it like that. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Kathy. And we have Maureen here. Hi, Maureen.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. You know, I just wanted to share, I lost my dad 4 years ago, and I was counting his breaths, you know, and last week I lost my father-in-law. You know, I'm a psychiatrist, and I started reading Buddha, and I wanted to very quickly share two things with you.
Okay.
What I read in what Buddha said. You know, first thing he said was that, you know, we are not born, nor we can die. We just change form. And our DNA was present like 300 years ago in this universe. And our DNA would be present after 300 years, you know, in this universe. And there was a wave of ocean which was moving very fast. It was tall, high, and it saw the beach and it realized it's going to die. And then it realized that, you know, she was a water before it became a wave and will remain a water after she disperses on the beach. So that gives me a lot of relief.
Yeah.
That we just changed form.
Yeah, I can.
And our loved ones always remain alive in our heart.
Yeah, yeah. So that was able, you know, with that belief, that was able, something that was making it able for you to go through that process and not see it as an absolute end, is what you're saying, but a continuation, just in a different form.
Yes, and I'm not talking about God or religion.
No, I hear that.
I'm talking about this universe that, you know, we are part of the universe. We came from here, and, you know, we'll change our form within this universe.
And, Moeen, I think you raise a really good point there in terms of each of our own individual beliefs and how much that can help us. I think that's huge, and I'm really glad that that's helpful for you.
Hey, thanks for taking the call.
Thank you. Thank you for calling in.
Good day. Bye.
Bye. I'm Chris Kington, and I'm with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, your Central Coast Public Radio station. A reminder, you can make listening to KCBX really simple by just asking your smart speaker to play KCBX. If you just joined us or you missed the show and you want to hear all of it or another show, they are pre-recorded and archived on KCBX's website, and you can also listen to them on iTunes. For the website, it's www.kcbx.org. I'm talking with Tony Huffaker, licensed marriage and family therapist and counseling services director, and Wynette Winkler, end-of-life doula and pet loss group facilitator for Hospice Slo County. We have just a few more minutes before we'll cut off calls, but the show is live and you have time for another call or two. You can call in at 805-781-3875, 805-781-3875. And we're going
like
to try
Sandra
going back,
back
to Sandra again. Sandra.
Hi, I'm sorry. Hey. We keep getting disconnected. So one last thing I wanted to say, though, was that, you know, I see life as a running race, as a journey. And basically, when I did my hospice, I would come in and pronounce patients, and I would tell the family that, you know, he or she completed his or her life journey. Because when you say die or death, that implies the end of something. And you know, I think that's kind of painful. And so I would say, you know, it's a journey, because when you put it in terms of a journey, this is the life journey. So now there is another journey that, you know, we don't know. It could be anybody's guess. But at the same time, it really gave them hope, and it made them feel good. You know, I see life as a running race, and we all start at the same time, but none of us will finish at the same time. And some of us will drop out of that running race, where with a life race, we all must end it. And there is no saying I quit. So that was my point, that, you know, it's really, if we start changing the terminology and call it a journey instead of death or life or death.
Well, and I'll go back to the therapist on this. Thank you, Sandra. Thank you for calling and being so diligent about calling back and back. Appreciate that. And what Sandra's saying is don't mention that it's death. Call it a journey. How does that work in what you do with grief counseling?
What I would say is, pardon me, you want to adjust your metaphors and your expressions and your use of death to the people that you're working with.
Mm-hmm.
I've known some people who won't some therapists won't use the expression pass, or they won't say, they'll say death. It has to be death. I tend to lean more towards using the word death and dying myself because I think it's important for people to really know that that's what we're talking about. I do think you have to adjust your metaphor based on who you're working with and what they're ready for at that time.
Sure.
For instance, I personally, and nothing wrong with Sandra's metaphor, I have a very difficult time with the life as a journey metaphor myself. It's something that I don't work well with. I love the, Alan Watts has a discussion where he says, no, life isn't a journey. Life is a musical. And we're supposed to sing or dance while there's music playing. And that metaphor works lovely for me as a way of conceiving life, but it might not, for instance, be a metaphor that
for
would appeal to Sandra
else.
At all.
Sure.
So we have to always be careful about tailoring,
right.
I think, our metaphors to the people who we're
right.
working with and tailor our use of language to what is most appropriate for them and what's going to be the most helpful for them to hear.
But, you know, you bring up a good point that I wanted to get to. What you're talking about in the work that you do with grief work or working with individuals who are hurting, who are grieving, is that regardless of how you see things, you're responding to them and giving them support in how they see things.
Exactly.
And that's a big difference.
And it's true for our family members as well. You know, we may look at somebody and think, hey, I think the thing that you really need to do in our mind is suck it up and move forward.
Right.
But if that's not where that person is at, then you're just really alienating them and telling them how their grieving is wrong.
Right.
And that's not going to be helpful. Sometimes giving advice is not nearly as useful as just being. And just being with somebody. Because people don't get the opportunity. And I'm sure with pets, especially when people don't get validated and don't get the opportunity to really say, this is to be heard. You know, what's that Hemingway quote about when you listen to people, listen completely, because most people never fully listen.
And it's so true. And it's just so interesting. So I heard when Sandra mentioned the journey, I immediately went to, oh, yeah, I'm walking along a track. And then I get tired and I sit down to take a rest. And I have different people with me at different times around that track and that journey. I have different dogs with me because my life has very much been many animals that I've had. So it resonated for me in terms of that trip that I've been taking these oh so many years, and who's been with me, and then who's not with me anymore.
Yeah. In, you know, something that popped into my head, I once had somebody tell me that someone who was trying to be supportive and kind once said to them that life never gives you anything, God never gives you anything more than you can handle. Gives a person anything more than you can handle. And her response was, my dad completed suicide. He was given more than he could handle. Mm-hmm. And that what the person had said to her was painful, even though
it was
meant to be well-intentioned.
Yeah.
So what is the best way? When we see that people are 3 days without a shower, don't want to be up, don't want to engage in the world. They're not ready yet because it's so early in grief. How can we support them?
Sure. I think one thing we can do is offer people concrete things that they need. You know, can I go take your other dogs to the kennel, you know, or pick your dogs up from the groomer? Can I get your kids at school for you? Can I bring in some groceries? Casseroles, by the way, I'm told by most people, while the thought's appreciated, people get a lot of casseroles. It might be good to think of another type of food type of thing for people than casserole. That's what people tell me in my work. So that what we're specifically doing is asking people, not putting it on the what can I do for you, because
right,
people who are bereaved
then they
are often,
have to make a choice.
Yeah, and they don't know what they need.
Right.
But to offer people things that we think they could use.
Yeah.
And let them give us an honest, you know,
right.
to look at somebody and say, you know, you need to get up out of bed and take a shower. Why? People survived thousands of years without taking a shower on a daily basis and got, you know, they can be in bed for another few days.
Yeah.
You know, that's not the end of the world at that point if they're not hurting themselves or hurting anybody else. So to say, hey, what can I do for you? You know, maybe I can pay your bills so you can stay in bed for another few days and try to pull yourself together. And I think a lot of it, it's really hard for us because I know one of the things I have children. Adult children, but I have a very difficult time when I work with people who are losing children because I have to force myself to know that that's a reality in the world, and I as a parent need to accept that that's a reality.
Right.
It's much easier for me to go, oh, you'll get over it, you know, or to not be emotionally present and know that your loss could be my loss someday, and that mm-hmm. I have to accept that. That's a reality mm-hmm. of being open to life.
Yeah.
And so I think, honestly, for us to be as open as we can to our friends' losses, and if we do that, I think then obviously if somebody has lost a dog who's been with them for 17 years and was the dog they bought before the other partner died and has been the person that's held them together for, you know, 15 years, that we wouldn't look at them and go, well, you can get another dog.
Yeah.
You know, if you can be open to their loss, you would never do that.
Yeah. So, you know, so we don't always have to say something. We can sometimes say nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just being with people sometimes, just to have somebody to sit and support them.
That's what we do in our support groups. And for instance, as the facilitator of that group, oftentimes my job is just to be there, be present, let other people talk, guide things as we go along. But the best support group really is when we're helping each other, listening to each other. And that's spouses, friends that come along, an individual, all the different people that come to our groups.
And during the holidays, too, some of the things that I've read that are helpful are things like, you know, if you're not sure you're going to make it through some kind of an event, make sure you've got your own car mm-hmm. so you can leave.
Yeah.
You know, if you, you know, try it. If you're uncomfortable, leave. People beware that if someone is there and they're grieving and they're uncomfortable, be okay with your own awkwardness. You don't have to say anything.
Mm-hmm.
Have the quiet be okay, and yeah. don't move away from them, but maybe just sit with them.
Sure. We so lose the value of, I just don't know what to say.
Yeah.
Or I wish I had something to say.
Well, maybe that's what to say.
Yeah, and that is so huge for people. That someone's not trying to solve it for them sometimes, but it's just they'll say, yeah, I wish I had something I could say.
Yeah. I want to thank my guests today, Tony Huffaker, licensed marriage family therapist and counseling services director, Hospice San Luis Obispo County. Wynette Winkler, a hospice volunteer, end-of-life doula and pet loss group facilitator, for joining me. Next week, host Fred Monroe. He will host the Central Coast Voices final show of 2018. And Central Coast Voices has been sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities and San Luis Obispo Community Foundation in collaboration with KCBX, made possible by Joan Geller Sargent. I'm Chris Kington Barker, wishing you a safe holiday season, and thank you for listening to Central Coast Voices and for your support of KCBX this year. Talk with you next year.